General Motors is back on top.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Move aside Toyota. General Motors has reclaimed the title of world's top-selling automaker. It's the first time GM has held the top spot since it was bailed out by the U.S. government after the financial crisis. But as Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, there is more to the story than just GM.
Yes, General Motors sold more than 9 million cars and trucks around the globe last year. But its ranking may have more to do with its rivals' struggles. Previous number one, Toyota, saw its sales fall last year to an estimated 8 million. Production was disrupted by the Japanese earthquake and tsunami last March, just as Toyota was recovering from a spate of safety recalls and bad publicity. Analyst Dave Sullivan with Auto Pacific says GM has made progress since its bankruptcy in 2009.
They're profitable. They've already gotten rid of all of their debt. They have some nice products on the market. But I think they're going to be careful to toot their own horn because they know that Toyota really suffered last year.
Sullivan says GM is also looking over its shoulder at German carmaker Volkswagen. In 2010, VW surpassed Ford to become the most profitable automaker. After dominating in Europe, it's expanding in the U.S. and Asia. VW hopes to be number one in sales and profits by 2018. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Well, we're just a day away from the South Carolina primary, and the four remaining Republican presidential candidates met for a debate on CNN last night. There was a lot of defense of free markets and unfettered capitalism. Former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum had this to say.
I believe in capitalism, too. I believe in capitalism for everybody. Not necessarily high finance, but capitalism that works for the working men and women of this country who are out there paddling alone in America right now.
Well, we're going to continue our series of interviews about the candidates now with a conversation about Rick Santorum's economics. Susan Hansen is professor emeritus of political science at the University of Pittsburgh. She joins us now to discuss. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, unlike some of his rivals, Rick Santorum comes from Pennsylvania. It's a very unusual state in many ways. It's got a very large union presence. It's a manufacturing state. How has that colored his economic philosophy?
Well, I'm not sure it has to any great degree. He remains very, very conservative, was one of the leading people getting the Bush tax cuts passed. He certainly talks about his coal mining grandfather a great deal, but I think his appeal locally was more on the basis of social issues, and I think those factors were really more important.
Before he became a senator from Pennsylvania, Santorum represented Pennsylvania's 18th district, which is right around Pittsburgh. How did he get along with the unions in that area?
Even many union members are strongly pro-gun, pro-life, anti-immigration, and I think he was able to exploit these issues and get at least a share of the union vote.
From a national perspective, we know Rick Santorum, as you say, as someone with very strong stances on social issues. What can you tell us about his economics that we may not know?
Well, the research that I've done has really not revealed anything that would distinguish him from the other candidates to any great degree. And I think Santorum has been much busier burnishing his conservative evangelical credentials rather than pushing economic differences.
Susan Hansen is Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Pittsburgh. Professor Hansen, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
And you can hear interviews about the economic philosophies of the other GOP candidates at marketplace.org. Let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in overseas trading this morning, up 1.5% in Tokyo and right now down about 0.1% in Frankfurt and in London. There are marathon negotiations going on in Greece today between government officials and creditors. They're trying to work out how much Greek debt has to be repaid in order for Greece to get more bailout money from international lenders. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow rose 45 points to close at 12,623.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by GoToMeeting by Citrix, bringing high-definition video conferencing to online meetings for face-to-face collaboration. More at GoToMeeting.com. by Allianz, insuring more than 80 million customers worldwide and providing retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. And by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com.
The AFL-CIO has launched a new ad campaign aimed at boosting the public image of unions. The ads are airing in Austin and Pittsburgh and will expand to other cities in the coming months. But as Elizabeth Wynn Johnson reports, the union label is conspicuously absent.
The AFL-CIO's multi-million dollar ad campaign comes at a time when fewer than 12% of private sector workers are unionized.
Work is what shakes us awake every morning and knocks us out every night.
It makes a very warm impression about the people who do work.
But to labor economist Gary Bertless of the Brookings Institution, this ad is just as notable for what it doesn't do.
It does not really mention unions. It didn't link the workers we saw with any direct action that viewers might take.
Contrast that with this United Garment Workers classic.
Look for the union label when you...
Today's image campaign steers well clear of any direct appeals.
Work doesn't separate. It's what binds us together. I teach your kid. You fix my car.
21st century unions may be onto something. Selling collectivism by appealing to individualism. In Washington, I'm Elizabeth Wynn Johnson for Marketplace.
And finally, remember that old Monopoly card that says, bank error in your favor, collect $200? Well, according to the BBC, there was a real-life bank error in favor of a school teacher in India this week. He was expecting his balance to be around $200, but when he checked his account at an ATM, he found it had $9.8 billion in it. The man called the bank and pointed out the error, so I guess he won't be going directly to jail. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
It's the hottest accessory among the political elite this year, but you too can have your own personal super PAC. It's easy.
This is not rocket science. For most people, you want to have a super PAC, fine. You file a one-page letter.
I'm Kai Rizdal, Super Political Action Committees, a step-by-step how-to. Also, the news from Wall Street on the broadcast. That's next time for Marketplace. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.